Good morning. I'm Tom Pearson. I'm the president and CEO for the Tacoma Pierce County Chamber. Welcome, and I am going to be your MC this morning. I hope everybody is doing well. Today, we're going to be joined by Congressman Derek Kilmer, 6th Congressional District, Bruce Kendall, president, CEO for the Economic Development Board for Tacoma Pierce County, Carrie Hurd, who's district director for the Seattle District, U.S. Small Business Administration, and Director Lisa Brown, Washington State Department of Commerce. Welcome to the small business and economic developments from across the 6th Congressional District and from the entire South Sound for joining the special briefing on SBA and the Washington Commerce initiatives around COVID-19. As you're aware, if you were on our call on Monday, we have a chat Q&A that will provide us the questions during the webinar. So I encourage you, and some of you already have done this, is start to ask those questions. We will get to a lot of your questions, and our goal is to get to those questions. If you're on the phone, it's listen only, but if you're calling in, you have an opportunity to submit a question to the panel via email. And that email is Allison B, and it's A-L-I-S-O-N-B, as in Bob, A-L-I-S-O-N-B, at tacomachamber.org. Later this week, for your reference, we will also have a summary of the Q&A for this call on the Chamber website and as well as on the Economic Development Board's website. As you know, these calls are put together by your Chamber as well as Economic Development Board for Tacoma Pierce County, Bruce Kendall, and our teams. But I also want to thank our sponsors for these reoccurring calls. We are going to do these calls every Monday, every Wednesday, every Friday, now until this crisis is over. And we are honored to have forward-facing, community-facing sponsors such as MultiCare, Health Systems, Business Health Trust, and Pierce County Government for sponsoring and helping us ensure that we have these calls for you. So before we get started, I do want to do a little ops check just with our team. I know there's some delays. There's a lot of folks trying to call in. We've got, you know, over 300 people, and we have more folks trying to get it onto the calls, and we're going to be pushing 400 here really quick. We are over 400 as we speak. So with that, Bruce Kendall, are you with us now?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. And I know Carrie Hurd.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Director Lisa Brown. Director Brown. Okay, so we will circle back and make sure we get to her, unless you are on mute, Director Brown. Lisa, you're there? All right, and then Congressman Derek Kilmer.
I'm here.
Excellent, Congressman, and we are gonna kick it off with you, if you are ready.
Terrific. Thank you, Tom, and good morning, everybody. First, I'd just like to thank everybody across the 6th Congressional District for joining in today. It is an honor to be your representative, and it's a responsibility I take very seriously. And that's why I'm glad folks are participating in today's call to talk and learn more about what the state is doing, what the federal government is doing to support small businesses, to support our nonprofits that are obviously being very adversely affected by the COVID-19 outbreak. I want to take a second just to thank the folks at the Tacoma Pierce County Chamber of Commerce for helping us get this call put together and for blasting it across our region. We know that folks are hurting all across Washington State, and it's vital that we get the latest and the most accurate information into the hands of all of our workers and our business owners and our chambers and our EDCs. Let me say up front, I know it's been a challenging few weeks for folks in our region. Washington State and the federal government are taking a really unprecedented action to contain the spread of COVID-19. I just got off a call with the State Hospital Association, and we are seeing a lot more cases and a strain already on our healthcare system. Obviously, the measures that are being taken at the state level and by the federal government is undoubtedly causing disruption to everyday life. And for our employers, for our chambers, for our small businesses, you're undoubtedly seeing and experiencing massive disruption when it comes to running your businesses, whether you're a restaurant that's now required to only provide takeout or a storefront that's seen fewer customers come in since folks started social distancing, or a manufacturer that's struggling to move products through ports that have since shut down. I understand the stress that this outbreak has brought to folks and to your families. And it's my hope that you'll at least find some answers through this call. I confess up front that there are still a lot of things that are in the works. There are a lot of proposals that are in motion, both at the legislative level and by the administration. But my predisposition, and this is part of the reason we're doing this call now, is to try to get whatever information we have to provide whatever guidance we have based at least on what we know is available now. Obviously, we're going to have to get a lot more tools into the toolbox to manage this, but I want to at least make sure that folks know about the tools that are in the toolbox right now. And we'll work with the chambers and with the EDCs to make sure you're getting information about those resources that are still to come. I know folks have a lot of questions, and we'll be dedicating most of our time to Q&A. Today, we'll be talking about both the state of Washington and the federal government's response to COVID-19 and what we're doing to mitigate the economic impacts to small businesses and to nonprofits in our neck of the woods. In order to ensure we get you the most accurate and useful information, I'm really grateful that we've got folks on from the U.S. Small Business Administration and hopefully soon from the Washington Department of Commerce, who are going to also talk through their work and answer your questions on resources being made available to small businesses and nonprofits that have experienced economic hardship as a direct result of this outbreak. I guess a friendly reminder before I go on, I want to inform you all about how you can submit questions during this call. If you're joining us on the Zoom platform, you can submit your questions through the chat box and our staff will share them when we get to Q&A. If you're joining us on the phone and want to ask a question, you can email Allison, A-L-I-S-O-N-B, at tacomachamber.org. That's Allison with one L and the letter B at tacomachamber.org, and use the subject COVID-19. And while folks prepare to ask questions, I'll just take a few minutes to talk about some of the work we've been doing in D.C. on behalf of our region and what some of my priorities are in ensuring that the federal government steps up to the scale and seriousness of this public health crisis. So you're seeing basically action in waves. And the first wave was 2 weeks ago, Congress passed a bill called the Coronavirus Preparedness and Response Supplemental Appropriations Act. The bill was quickly signed into law by the president. That legislation provided $8.3 billion of upfront funding, with $2.2 billion going specifically to public health funding for prevention, preparedness, and response, including $950 million to support state and local health agencies, particularly folks on the front line. And unfortunately, our state is one of those that are on the front line of this. Nearly $1 billion of that bill was focused on medical supplies and medical surge capacity. That's part of the conversation we were just having with the state the state hospital association. About $3 billion for research and development of vaccines and therapeutics and diagnostics. And as a member of the House Appropriations Committee, I have the opportunity to play a role in crafting bills like this, and to hopefully advocate for the needs of our region. And in fact, that played out even before we had a single case diagnosed here in Washington. We began to hear from shellfish growers in our region, from export-dependent manufacturers in our region who are reaching out saying, listen, we ship to China and the ports in China are shut. And so we already, started putting wheels in motion on this even before we had cases diagnosed and saw the disruption that we're now seeing on main streets and all throughout our region. When we started hearing that, I reached out directly to our House leadership, including our speaker and the appropriations chair, to push for getting immediate assistance out to employers in affected communities. And as a result, that first bill that Congress passed included a measure that enables the Small Business Administration to provide up to $7 billion in loans to small businesses across our region and across the country that are suffering financial losses as a result of the outbreak. And it's important for the federal government to have the backs of our small businesses by providing this assistance. Since the passage of that legislation, my team here in the district has been hustling to ensure that our state collected the right evidence and documentation to unlock that financial assistance for small businesses here in Washington. And as a result, this past Monday, the SBA officially declared a disaster for many of Washington's county, including every county in Washington's 6th congressional district. Applications for economic injury disaster loans are now available for small businesses and for private nonprofits that are suffering a substantial economic injury as a result of COVID-19. I know we have the economic development, I know we have the SBA regional folks on, and they can talk more in detail about that. But these are low interest loans with a maximum repayment period of 30 years. They're designed to give businesses a sense of stability during a time of disaster and ensure cash flow and general operations can remain steady until we get through this. I know that loans aren't ideal. I know that as someone who spent most of my adult life paying off my student loans, but this aid is just the first in a series of actions I think you will see at the federal level. Because these are available now, we wanted to get this information out to you now, and I think you'll see more coming in the ensuing weeks. I spoke to the regional director for the Economic Development Administration. They are looking at additional sources, including revolving loan funds. That's an existing program. That money can get out the door quickly. So, you know, we're working to kind of build the plane mid-flight here. I'm only going to share a little bit more, and I want to make sure we leave plenty of time for questions and for the others on the line. In addition to that first emergency package, more action was taken this past Saturday. Congress passed the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. That was a bipartisan bill. It is the expectation that the Senate will likely pass that today, and the president has said he would sign it. It included a bipartisan measure that I had led to provide disaster unemployment assistance, particularly to states like ours that are particularly hard hit. That bill included making sure that as testing is made available, that it is made available without a cost to patients, including to folks who don't have insurance. Paid leave provisions for workers. And I know there's questions about how that works, and I'm happy to talk through it. But it was a paid emergency leave with 2 weeks of paid sick leave and up to 3 months of paid family and medical leave, as well as enhanced unemployment insurance for states like ours that are particularly hard hit. It includes provisions to strengthen nutrition security and food security, including additional funding for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, student meals, senior nutrition, and funding for food banks. There are 22 million kids in our country who get free and reduced price school meals for their food security, and we need to make sure that those kiddos have food to eat. And then finally, that bill increases federal funds for Medicaid to support our local and state and tribal governments and health systems so that they have the resources that they need to combat this crisis. At a time like this, I think providing help to workers and to families and all those who need it is really important. The bill passed the House 363-40, and I think is a good effort for the federal government to step up. It appears again that the Senate will pass it today, that the president intends to sign it quickly. Listen, over the past few weeks, I've spoken at length with healthcare providers, hospital administrators, state and local officials, tribal leaders, small business owners, and everyone in between to learn about the needs of folks across our region. And that has definitely informed our work in our office to ensure that there's a robust and coordinated federal response. It's clear there's plenty more to do. And work is already underway on a third emergency response package focused on trying to stimulate the economy and assist in addressing the urgency around testing. But there's plenty more that needs to be done. So with that, I want to turn it over to our experts to give a few introductory remarks about the work they're doing to provide relief and assistance to our small businesses and nonprofits throughout our district. As a reminder, to ask a question of me or of one of our experts, if you're joining us on the Zoom platform, you can submit your questions through the chat box, and the chamber staff will share them with our panelists, and If you're joining us on the phone and want to ask a question, you can email AllisonB@TacomaChamber.org. It's Allison with one L and the letter B at TacomaChamber.org, and use the subject line COVID-19, and we'll make sure we get to your question. So with that, maybe I can kick it over to Carrie Hurd, the district director at the Seattle District Office of the Small Business Administration. She's going to talk more in depth about the SBA's Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program and how small businesses and nonprofits can start applying for assistance now. So with that, take it away, Carrie.
All right. I'm not Carrie. This is Tom again. Just a couple of things that, first of all, thank you, Congressman. Leadership matters in crises like this, and we're proud to have you as our leader working on our behalf. So thank you. One correction, I don't like to correct you too often, Congressman, is the I'd point people, if you're on the webinar, to the Q&A option to ask the questions. We'll capture them either way, but the Q&A option is the best place to on your screen there. So on to the U.S. Business Administration. You're welcome. Business Administration presents, as Congressman said, EIDL program and other SBA resources available. I'm going to turn it over to Carrie Hurd, the District Director for SBA Seattle Office. Carrie?
Thank you. While I'm looking forward to the opportunity of sharing our information with you, I do wish it was under better circumstances. Before I advance through some technical notes, what I'd like to do is just offer really some appreciation of our government leaders, and in particular, a couple here locally, the cooperation with, as Congressman Kilmer alluded to, there was a lot of negotiating and getting some language passed that was very critical in us being able to be as responsive in this economic injury for our small businesses. And I want to highlight that had that language not been spearheaded and sponsored by Congressman Kilmer, this would not be possible today. We have never in the history of SBA, so let me rewind and back up. So the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program is a program that we have in our disaster package when there's earthquakes, flooding, et cetera, every day. However, we have never used this particular program for a virus or an illness, and we likewise did not use it after 9/11's terrorist attacks. So this is an unprecedented expansion of the program for a very good reason. Likewise, I want to thank the governor's team who was working in cooperation to ensure that we were able to get that disaster declaration into SBA headquarters and get it approved so timely. You just cannot begin to imagine the amount of effort that went into that, and so I applaud all parties who were involved. The cooperation between the levels of government, federal, state, and even between the cities has just been impressive as I've had this opportunity to work with many of them. So what I wanted to first state is that SBA's loan programs are here every day for every small business and everywhere across our state. We're very fortunate that we get the opportunity to help businesses start, grow, expand, and recover. And so most of today, I'm going to be focusing primarily on the recover part, but I want you to know that these programs, for the most part, that we have available will help our small businesses recover even if they don't use the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, which we affectionately refer to as EIDL. So there's three points of information I want to share that is the most important thing that I'm going to say today. First of all is our website. It is sba.gov/disaster. It's our telephone number, which I apologize, I scrolled down, and now it's at the bottom of my page. And I should have it like memorized because I've called it and referred so many times. So here's the telephone number, 800-659-2955. Our email to our customer care line is all one word, disastercustomerservice@sba.gov. Now, having said that, we have a district office in Seattle. Most of our team are continuing their daily mission to help businesses keep their contracts with government agencies, get the capital they would need normally, but they are teleworking. We also have some of our staff shifted to helping us support the businesses who call into our office through our own regular telephone number. Additionally, the leadership team, myself, my deputy, and our supervisory lender relations specialists are working in our office geographically dispersed. Our office is open. However, we have placed some additional measures so that nobody can just walk into our office, and we're only meeting with those individuals in one specific area of our office. As most of you know, SBA helps people export, and we help Main Street every single day. With the disaster loan program, there are some nuances. So from now to the end of this, I'll be just talking specifically about EIDL, unless you have questions that take us into other programs. As Congressman Kilmer alluded to, these loans can go up to $2 million. The loans are specifically to help pay fixed debts, payroll, accounts payable, and other bills that cannot be paid because of the disaster's impact. So if the lot next to you is now on a discount and you'd like to do an expansion, the EIDL program won't be for you for that, but you can also reach out to us for our regular loan and we may be able to help you there. The maximum term is up to 30 years. And the terms are determined case by case, depending on the borrower's ability to repay. Also, once your loan is dispersed, there's no payments for the first 12 months. So this is a program that's really designed to help you expand your capital. And I know I said I would just allow this to be on the EIDL, but I also want to quickly touch that if you already have an existing SBA loan, the lenders that are servicing that loan do have SBA flexibilities to defer the payments on that loan, and it can be 3 to 6 months. That you would work through directly through your existing lender, and they do not have to seek SBA approval for that. Anything beyond that, they need to come in for. The types of businesses that are eligible, you know, really it's the entire industry gamut that you can think of. The key is that they have to be small business. So if you have several corporations and affiliates, we're going to look at that on a global level as opposed to one corporation or another corporation. And then something that is probably on your mind is collateral. Loans under $25,000 do not have to be secured with available collateral. Loans over $25,000 do. But I really want to emphasize that we do not decline a loan just because you don't have enough collateral. Mostly we're looking at your ability to repay. So again, I want to make sure that you have the telephone number, 800-659-2955, and sba.gov/disaster. And I will now just be on the line for questions.
Thank you, Carrie. This is Derek Kilmer again. Next up, I'm happy to introduce Lisa Brown, the director of the Washington State Department of Commerce. She's going to walk through what steps the state of Washington has taken to support our small businesses here at home and any resources that those businesses listening can take advantage of. So Director Brown, you have the floor.
Just maybe unmute yourself, Director Brown. So maybe we'll jump into some questions, Congressman.
Sure.
And when we hear from Lisa, we know she's around and trying to be on the call, but we'll see in the back end of how we can get her. We'll get her on a cell phone if we have to. So I've got some questions in front of me. Unless you have some questions there, Congressman, I'm happy to start us off.
No, go ahead.
So here's the first question. We're trying to work with tenants who are out of work. What resources are available to support landlords trying to keep these people housed, but still have loans, utilities, et cetera, pay? What does a landlord qualify for an SBA help?
Let me invite Carrie there.
That is a really good question. And as we speak, I was fortunate enough to see that on the board, and I have emailed back to get us a good answer from our public information team. Because I honestly just don't know. But I want to make sure I have an answer for us before we're done, or that I can get back to you.
And that's a good point. What we will do, Congressman, we will make sure if we can't answer, we have over 600 people now on the phone, I think. And if we don't get to all the questions or don't get an answer, we will make sure we do a Q&A back out to make sure folks, and that'll be on our site as well as the chamber site. And you will obviously have access to that as well.
I will just add I mentioned that the legislative activity is sort of coming in waves. In the first two bills, there is not anything that is specifically yet geared towards housing insecurity, either targeted at renters or landlords. As you've likely read in the press, there is a lot of discussion about whether provisions in that regard will be part of a third legislative package. So I guess the short answer is to be determined. Other than the SBA provisions that have already passed and some direct support in the form of unemployment assistance and paid leave so that people can still have dollars coming through the door, there's nothing direct for that yet.
Okay. The next question is, the federal government is now asking small business to pay for added benefits, i.e. paid leave, when we are losing revenue. Where is the money for these hours supposed to come from?
Let me talk through how the paid leave provisions were written. And then if there are further questions about it, I'm more than happy to dive into those. So there's kind of two elements. The bill that will likely be passed by the Senate today and that the president has expressed support for, so my expectation is that he will sign it. It provides 2 weeks of paid sick leave and up to 3 months of paid family and medical leave. The emergency paid sick days requires employers to allow workers to accrue 7 days of paid sick leave and an additional 14 days available immediately in the event of a public health emergency, including coronavirus. So let me kind of cover the paid sick leave provisions first. It requires employers to allow workers to gradually earn 7 days of paid sick leave. It requires employers to provide an additional 14 days of paid sick leave in a public health emergency like the coronavirus. It ensures that paid sick leave covers days when your kid's school is closed as a consequence of a public health emergency, when your employer is closed due to public health emergency, or if you or a family member is quarantined or isolated due to a public health emergency. There is a cap on the amount of assistance of that leave. It caps at $511 a day, roughly what someone makes who earns $133,000 annually. But to get direct to how do you cover it, the bill provides a tax credit to employers to cover the cost. The credit is applied to the tax that a company or a nonprofit normally pays for each employee's Social Security. That's the 6.2% tax employers pay on each employee's salary. So that's the provision under the paid sick leave part. On the paid family leave part, it calls for providing workers with 2/3 of their pay for up to another 10 weeks, only if their kids' schools are closed. And for the paid family leave provisions, those payments are limited to $200 a day, which would cover 2/3 of the typical daily wage of someone earning up to 75 grand annually. The original bill would have covered a worker who'd been diagnosed or tested or quarantined or someone caring for an affected family member. It got revised, and so that is no longer the provision. Under the legislation, small businesses with fewer than 50 employees could apply for financial hardship waivers from the leave provisions affecting workers whose kids' schools have closed. In terms of how are we expected to pay for it, it's a tax credit. On top of that, if sick leave or family and medical leave end up costing more than the Social Security tax burden for that employer, the government will send the employer a check to cover the remaining costs.
Yes.
So that is how it will be determined.
Who is this?
Oops. Director Brown, we hear you.
Kilmer, and they're trying to get me on. So just a second. Okay, not now.
Director Brown.
Can you hear me, Congressman?
Yeah, we hear you. We hear you.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Okay. That's all right. You're on the call.
Sorry for the difficulties before.
Hold on, Director Grant Brown. I was just completing an answer to a question, and then I'll just invite you to say a few words.
Okay. Thank you.
So hopefully that gives some sense of how this is planned. The Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said Saturday that the Treasury Department intends to advance funds to businesses concerned about their cash flows. And the idea in these provisions is that the federal government will pick up the full tab by giving companies refundable credits against their Social Security payroll taxes. So that's the answer in a nutshell. The hope is both to keep employers whole, but also to keep workers whole. You know, if the idea here is to try to mitigate risk to and lessen the spread of this, having people take leave or have to deal with caregiving, I think is actually important, but doing it in a way that doesn't add to the stress and burden of our employers who are already stressed and burdened also makes sense. So that's the answer in a nutshell. I hope that's helpful. And with that, let me call on Director Brown from the Commerce Department if she's got any opening comments, and then we'll get back to questions.
Thank you, Congressman. Sorry for the technological difficulties earlier. First of all, just want to emphasize that this is unprecedented in terms of both the healthcare and public safety challenge we're facing and the economic disruption. And the good news is that there's really close coordination, local, state, and federal level. And we really also rely on our businesses, our EDCs and ADOs, as we go through this to both get the information out there and also give us the information we need to understand where the gaps are, who's falling through the cracks, and how we can respond. At the state level, number one, of course, is the public health and safety issue and the rather unprecedented actions that the governor has been taking are based on the concept that if we slow the spread and flatten the curve, then our healthcare system will be able to handle the spike in infections without going above its capacity. So that is the rationale behind the emergency orders that are being put forward at this point in time. And we are very well aware that this is incredibly disruptive economically, particularly for small businesses. You have plenty of information and websites. I'm going to give you just one more because it is a one-stop portal for the state of Washington that has emergency orders by the governor, emergency rules by agencies like Department of Revenue relaxing tax deadlines, Employment Security Department rules around unemployment benefits and new flexibility there, labor and industry emergency rules about flexibility on sick leave. So all of that, as well as health information, information about schools, is a portal, coronavirus.wa.gov. So again, coronavirus.wa.gov. The business and worker relief part of that portal is currently being populated. There will be more there, and you can sign up for email notification, and we're putting an AI question service on it so we can get people's questions and create FAQs for that. I'll just briefly cover, because this information is available on the site, that there are flexibility in rules around taxes, penalties, and benefit programs. So you can find all of that on the site. Or I'm going to offer up my assistant director, Chris Green, as your one-stop shop also for questions and ask for information, and he or I will help route you in the right direction to answer your questions or to gauge your concerns. The legislature, in addition to its regular supplemental budget, also passed a $200 million emergency fund that is currently being released, and the details of that are going out from our budget office today. But of particular interest is that they set aside $25 million for buying down increases in unemployment insurance rates. So there is an awareness. Our UI fund is very healthy right now, but it won't be for long. And there is definitely a recognition that there will need to be some state support in order to keep those rates reasonable for employers. In the supplemental budget, the legislature also infused funds into what you may remember as the Strategic Reserve Fund. We also call it now the Working Washington Fund. That's more direct grant assistance that can go in partnership with ADOs in order to retain jobs in Washington State. And Chris and his team is putting together guidelines around that right now that we'll be able to share with you soon. One of our philosophies is that if there's money in the supplemental budget that is supposed to go out in grants for infrastructure or housing, that we figure out how to turn around those grants and contracts in record time to get more dollars flowing in the community. So yesterday, even though the budget hasn't been signed yet, Commerce issued $30 million in a formula to every county in the state, and that's for building capacity for people who need to isolate or quarantine, but for whatever reason cannot do that at home. Perhaps there's vulnerable people at home, or perhaps they're already homeless, but we don't want them in a hospital bed if they're not sick enough to take up our scarce hospital resources. So those contracts are out there now for every county to start making and planning that capacity. I'll just close by saying, businesses are also stepping up, offering to support food for schools and medical supplies that might be in short supply, and looking at unprecedented and innovative ways to pull together during this time, and I want to thank you for that. And I know that that will continue as we proceed through the next several weeks where infection rates will increase, but ultimately we get past that spike and can start turning our attention to recovery and economic stimulus. Thank you again, Congressman Kilmer. Your office has been great to work with.
Okay, on to the next question. We are a business with a fraction of our regular business. We need to help now. What kind of help can we and our employees get now?
So this is Derek, and I'll invite the SBA and Commerce to weigh in as well. So the SBA disaster loans are available now. That expansion of that capacity was passed in the first package and signed by the president. Now, I think 10 days ago, we were certified as a state on Monday. The provisions around things like paid leave and the tax credits to employers for offering that has not yet been passed by the Senate or signed. So those provisions are likely not for a bit. But let me invite Carrie or Lisa if they have other things they want to add to that.
This is Lisa. I'll just say that for your employees, we are working to create flexibility and expansion of unemployment insurance benefits. And I think the governor will have another order later today that will talk about some increased flexibility there. We understand, however, that there are many people who are self-employed, part-time workers, hourly workers. There are people who are falling through the cracks. The commissioner of the Employment Security Department, Susie Levine, and I have our teams working on a gap analysis, and we are attempting to understand what options we have either at the state level or working with our federal partners for expanding assistance in the form of either benefits or direct grants to businesses, knowing that many may be able to take advantage of these loans and some will feel that's not appropriate for them.
I'll just add, this is Derek, I'll just add, this is an area where the Washington State Congressional Delegation is entirely aligned in terms of advocating on behalf of employers here in the state of Washington. We just, every Democrat and every Republican in the delegation sent a letter to Democratic and Republican leadership and to every committee chair and ranking member laying out some priorities on which we are aligned. One, trying to get direct access to economic assistance through the Economic Development Administration. They have things like revolving loan programs and existing economic adjustment funds that we have asked to be plussed up and pushed out to start getting direct support to employers. There was the earlier question around housing. Part of the request that the state made was, that the state delegation made, Democrats and Republicans, was to provide direct funds through the Department of Housing and Urban Development for rental assistance or other appropriate programs to prevent evictions when an individual's inability to pay rent or utilities or meet other housing needs is tied to a loss of income as a consequence of something they cannot control, this outbreak. In addition, we've asked for direct support for federal resources to be made available for employers that are impacted by this, and making sure that any support that comes is made retroactive to when the state declared this disaster, so that we're not penalized because the state of Washington was unfortunately hit first by all of this.
Okay, so a little bit of a follow-up question. I have applied for an SBA loan. Do I just wait for a response? How long? How do I get a confirmed receipt?
Okay, so I'm going to address the previous question just a bit, and then I'm going to go into this answer. So as far as how you get SBA assistance now, go to the sba.gov/disaster site register and open an application. There's some nuances, and we have a great customer service team to help you with that. Don't wait. If you think you might not be eligible, don't worry about it. Go ahead and apply and let us determine if you're eligible or not eligible. So now that you've applied for an SBA loan, it will typically take, you'll get this message saying that you have a loan number, an application number, and your loan is being in review. What will happen is that file will get assigned to a case manager who's going to work with you to determine how much is your need and validate that this is associated with COVID-19. So I don't know if it will be a week before they reach out to you, but the entire process takes typically 2 to 3 weeks. So the 3 week mark is where we kind of expect that you will have been contacted. Once your loan is approved, they will disperse at least, well, if your loan's over $25,000, they'll try to get you a check, or not check, but a transfer for $25,000 within 5 days. So the entire process does take about a month. Now, the load on our case managers right now, as you can imagine, is pretty heavy. But the benefit is that, because it's probably the only benefit of Washington being early on, is that we can get our applications in early on. Initially, we had most of the counties in Washington eligible, and with the statewide expansion, now all of the counties are eligible. 7 of the counties have not yet been added to the portal, but should be done no later than tonight. So, and I have those counties that I can provide later.
And maybe just a follow-up, how is the SBA making it easy to apply? I mean, we all know sometimes these are difficult, so.
I'm glad you asked that question, because while the documentation, we still have to have some, the actual portal itself is relatively easy. It's almost like signing up to pay your tuition online. We ask minimal information. The key that we do have to have is the right organizational structure. So if you're a sole proprietor, there's all these little buttons, sole proprietor, C Corp, a nonprofit. You have to select the right button for your organizational structure, because then that's what drives the documentation that is needed. Our office is going through training tomorrow to be able to help consult with folks on some of the questions that are nuanced in this particular situation. So right now there's a question of physical damage. In this particular event, there isn't physical damage, but it's a red asterisk. You have to have something in the sale to successfully move on. We're working through that to make sure that we have something we can advertise to get people to put in what will work. Likewise, if you're a sole proprietor, we're really going to ask for your tax returns. It's not going to be that extensive. The key is that we want to make sure that we know what you were making before the event so that we can figure out what you need for your expenses after the event, or to get you through this event in this case.
And in terms of cash flow, this question is about, will the state postpone B&O payments and IRS payments to free up cash flow to get moving again?
Let me start with IRS, and then I can perhaps kick it over to Director Brown to talk about what the state's plan is. Now, more than a week ago, I joined in with many of my colleagues in requesting that the IRS delay the filing deadline. Obviously, everybody's sort of being barraged right now, our employers and frankly for individual filings as well. People are just trying to keep their heads above water. We have not yet gotten an affirmative answer to that, but we did get some good news yesterday, and that is that the Treasury Secretary announced that his department was pushing back the payment deadline, pushing back the April 15th deadline to pay taxes owed, giving individuals and many businesses 90 extra days to send checks to the government. That target date may be a moving target. We'll see where things go. But individuals can defer up to $1 million of tax liabilities, and corporations can get an extension of up to 10 million. And there will not be, based on the guidance provided by the Treasury Department, there will not be interest charges or penalties for delayed payment. That is what I know so far. Let me see if I can find for folks. It's Form 4868 is the process for getting the extension, which would give taxpayers until October 15th to file a return and pay anything owed. If folks want to just get a full-on extension. And I don't know, Director Brown, if you have any guidance in terms of what the state's doing on B&O.
I think the mute button, maybe Director Brown, you're there. Okay, we'll come back to Director Brown on that, on the B&O tax piece. We'll put that back on the board to ask in a second. Let me ask this question. You know, as we're getting close to Lent and Easter, churches are asking, you know, what options do they have available to them for support and available to them? Any thoughts on gatherings during the Holy Week? I don't know who wants to take on this.
Carrie, do you want to take that?
As far as their gatherings, I don't know if I am the appropriate person to answer. My church has definitely given us some guidance. Unfortunately, we stream our services and our attendance online has gone up significantly. But as far as being eligible for a loan, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I was hoping you could at least touch that. Are houses of worship eligible for the SBA assistance?
Yes, and so as far as their eligibility goes, churches are eligible. The definition for eligible nonprofits is private, and our churches play a very vital role in a lot of our community social services. So in this particular case, they are eligible for SBA loans, and they just need to apply to determine how much and the other considerations we have to factor in. Nonprofits that have membership requirements, so in a church you might be a member, that doesn't apply, but if it's a nonprofit that has a membership requirement, so it's a special club, those are not necessarily eligible.
And in terms of the question around, you know, churches or other large group meetings, you know, I've encouraged everybody to just follow the guidance from both the State Department of Health and from your county's public health departments. I think all of them have been good and aggressive at getting information out and guidance out to employers. So my encouragement would be to follow that.
Very good. Next question I have is there anything new on the president declaring a major disaster so the disaster unemployment assistance program can be used?
It's a really good question. We have in the bill that recently passed, expanded unemployment assistance, and got, and hopefully that will pass the Senate today. In that bill, it provides all states with some emergency funding for unemployment insurance to fund staffing and IT and other costs related to administering UI. It provides specific support and additional support to states that have been hardest hit to get that support out, and also temporarily provides full federal financing of extended benefits rather than requiring the 50% state financing, which can be a strain on a state unemployment insurance system. It waives, it has the federal government step up, and it waives interest on loans states may need to take for their UI program. I have also introduced a bipartisan bill, and it's a bicameral bill that would get at this notion of specifically disaster unemployment assistance. It is in the president's emergency declaration from last week. It included language that says that that the ongoing coronavirus pandemic is of sufficient severity and magnitude to warrant an emergency determination under the Stafford Disaster Relief and Emergency Assistance Act. We are hearing that that is sufficient to trigger disaster unemployment assistance when a state requests that a major disaster declaration is made. So that is the latest and greatest that I have on that. Under the Stafford Act, the president can issue a major disaster at the request of a governor. And at that point, our understanding is that that triggers disaster unemployment assistance. Having said that, it's been an ongoing conversation with the state Employment Security Department as to whether or not more steps need to be taken. As negotiations happen on this third bill, we're looking at whether the bipartisan bill that I've introduced that just makes it a legislative action can be pulled into that third package and just make it clear for everybody, because I think it's just a matter of time before you see every state requesting that this be triggered, and rather than going through unnecessary bureaucratic hurdles, just getting dollars out to people who need it seems important. So that's perhaps a longer answer than you wanted, but that's what I know so far.
That's good. Is the SBA re-amortizing existing loans longer duration than 20 years?
Yes. So most of our regular loans are through actual commercial lenders, and we are a guarantor on those loans, similar to an insurance company. Through the SBA servicing rights that we give and work with our lenders every day, they can do certain actions without even seeking SBA's guidance, and re-amortizing a loan does fall under that. I'm hesitant to share this, but I do know that we are working on some additional policy to be able to encourage them to do that. That some of that will take some legislative action and may be included in that third package that Congressman Kilmer's mentioning, but they can do it. Again, so it says longer duration to 20 years. So currently, through if it's real estate, we have a program where we can actually go to a 25-year term on refinancing of real estate. That's been a very popular program, and it's really helped improve some cash flows for some businesses. Likewise, the regular 7A program, and those are just our statutes, the lender can also refinance real estate and use a loan guarantee. If you have a working capital loan to pay your payroll and stuff, the refinancing is possible. A lot of those, the interest rates are bank determined as opposed to SBA determined, so you'll have to work with the lender to make sure that that makes sense. But the typical term is going to be dependent upon the use of the funds and or the collateral used to secure the loan.
Very good. All right. I know we have over 100 questions in 30 minutes, so let's go to the next one. Many in the fishing industry are contract workers and not eligible for unemployment. This includes boat owners to fishermen. Doesn't seem like the SBA or options will apply to them. How can the SBA help?
Okay, well, I'm glad that you asked that question, because often our contract workers don't realize that they are actually sole proprietors. They are business owners. They just don't think of themselves in that. So independent contractors could potentially be eligible based on how they file as far as their taxes. So they have to meet some filing guidance or filing requirements that are in IRS publication 334. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's messaging on the part of the licensing organizations or just how we think of businesses, but contract workers are really kind of their own self-employed business.
Jim. The next question is, businesses with private loans, they are not seeing financial institutions giving relief. How can you be helping and pressuring them to help businesses with private loans?
I will tell you, much of this week has been doing outreach to our local employers. That includes our financial institutions. I think we have tried to be a conduit based on some of the concerns that we have heard from local employers about the hit that they are taking, to make sure that our financial institutions are understanding exactly what's happening on the ground. As we discuss potential, kind of third wave legislation, there's a lot of options on the table, and I'm always reticent to talk about legislation when we're not yet clear what may or may not be in it. But among ideas that are being discussed are things like, and you've likely seen this in the press, things like direct payments to individuals, small business lending provisions, further small business lending provisions, language around credit facilities and commercial paper facilities, some targeted support to industries that are being particularly hard hit, looking at using the tax code, whether that be employee retention tax credits or temporary employer payroll tax holidays, or even looking at restoration of net operating loss carrybacks, where you'd be able to use the net operating loss against income in prior tax years, all sorts of ideas on the table, trying to acknowledge the just massive disruption that employers and workers are dealing with right now. I can't tell you exactly how that's going to land yet. We're trying to get what information we know out to people as soon as we can.
And I believe Director
and I don't know
Brown
if the,
is.
I don't know if the. Go ahead. Sorry, I don't know if either of the others on the call want to add in on that.
Congressman, this is Lisa Brown. Sorry, I was off the call briefly. I'm back. I think there was a call on business and occupation tax. So I did want people to know that there is a possibility for deferral of penalties and extensions. The Department of Revenue is taking that in right now on a case-by-case basis, and we can send you a link to make available to the participants on the call.
And just to remind everybody, the question was on B&O tax. Is there an option? Is there going to be an option where we can defer some of the B&O tax? And so that was, thank you, Director Brown. All right, so next question I have, how does new federal sick leave work with Washington State family and medical leave and existing employer or sick leave? That should be an easy answer, right?
I know that for states that have an existing sick leave and paid family leave policy, at least my understanding is that leave is pushed out first, and the federal government will reimburse those state programs first, and then as payments are made directly from employers from there, again, there's a tax credit against the payroll tax to cover any additional employer cost. That is my understanding, and if we hear something different, I'll make sure we push that out. And I don't know, Lisa, if you've heard anything different or want to supplement or amend anything that I just said.
No, thanks. I think that's our understanding as well.
Okay, so this next question, I'm not sure we have anybody that will be able to answer this, but I think we have the right people in the room, so to speak. Employers are reporting employees being denied unemployment. What is going on with that? Question mark.
So employers are reporting people being denied unemployment. Was that the question again?
Yes, that was the question.
So obviously, I don't know exactly under what circumstances that's occurring. I believe that you're going to hear another, some more emergency rules this afternoon. I believe the governor is planning to waive the 1 week requirement. So it could be that the person was not eligible to apply yet, and that will become easier. It could also be that they don't have enough hours in the system, but as the congressman said, I think we're working on flexibility for some of those requirements. So I guess my answer at this point in time is that they should try again, and then if we can identify what the barriers are, we will work with Employment Security Department on that.
Yeah, and we are trying to get Employment Security on Friday, but I will reiterate this, that I just got handed an email that came to us. It was a restaurant business that applied, and they all got on standby, and then they were all denied. And, you know, obviously we want to take care of those families and make sure that their families are taken care of. So
yeah, absolutely. I will pass that on directly to Commissioner Levine. I know that her team, she's redeploying people specifically to work in this arena, but I'll put that specific case in front of her so we can try to expedite any barriers that are out there and do something about it.
Thank you, Director Brown. We're happy to send this directly to you. Or to them, either way. All right, next question. Banks want to help with loans but need adjustments to regulations. Are you, Congressman Kilmer, working on that?
So we're kind of keeping a list of flexibilities that are required in hopes of, as various legislative waves come down the pipe, that those are things that can be considered. Some of them have been in the financial services arena. Some of them, you know, I literally just got off a call with the State Hospital Association. They are looking for some additional flexibilities. I spoke this morning with the president of the University of Washington. They are looking for flexibilities. So we're trying to pull all of these together so that as Congress takes action, that all of these, all of these issues are being considered. But let me just add, if there is a specific area that a financial institution is looking at that would help provide more relief to workers and our local businesses, please put them in touch with our office.
Okay. Next question comes in. I live in Clark County, Washington. Business is based in Oregon, licensed in Washington and Oregon. Do I use home or business address when applying? Timeline for Oregon disaster declaration? ?
It is in the works. I might have misunderstood that. It's based in Oregon, so does that mean Oregon is its registered address?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
So yes, they will need to apply under the Declaration of Oregon. However, I think that this is one where I would actually like them to call our office locally, and I'll caution those callers on the phone to not bombard my number, but I think in this particular one, some one-on-one guidance would be great. So if you'll call 206-553-7040, that will allow me to get them in touch with someone who can consult with them on the timing. That's a nuance.
Okay.
Hey, Tom, this is Derek. I should make one correction or amendment to my answer on the paid sick leave piece. And that is, it's important to acknowledge that the legislation that is, and I'd say this more, in case there's any employers on the call with more than 500 workers, the provisions, and including the tax credits, only apply to employers with 500 or fewer workers. The small and mid-sized employers are required to provide it and get a tax credit for providing it. Larger, about 90% of big businesses already provide paid sick leave and paid family leave, and are not covered by the by the requirement or by the tax credit. That is obviously the subject of some controversy. In the initial proposals in the House, it would have covered everybody. The administration was not supportive of having it cover everybody. So that is how it landed. So again, I wanted to just correct that just in case there's any larger employers on the line who are wondering about the specifics there.
Very good. Next question is on loans. Loans may cause additional long-term costs. How can government help reduce costs? Taxes? Are small business support grants being considered?
There's a lot of discussion about that. Obviously, part of the conversation has been around things like refundable tax credits, both to individuals, some of the discussion around potentially direct payments to individuals, also potentially direct credits to employers. I'll give you an example that has come up and that has been a topic of conversation even within the Washington State delegation. If we're encouraging folks to telework, not every employer has the capacity to manage that, or we've spoken just this week with a small business who said, we don't have laptops. So one discussion was to create a refundable tax credit for employers that incentivize, you know, the creation of telecommuting policies, and that would allow and encourage employees to telecommute. There has been discussion about creating a tax credit for small and medium-sized enterprises that report a 25% or more drop in revenue that can be tied to the coronavirus. You know, again, making that a refundable tax credit. Those two ideas are included in the letter that the Washington State delegation, Democrats and Republicans, sent to House leadership and to all the committee chairs with jurisdiction over these matters. So I share that with you. This, you know, again, what we've tried to do, including with this call, is to get out information about what resources are available now. Obviously, the SBA assistance is available now. There's a lot of conversation around what future legislative packages will or will not include. And as we get information about it, we'll push it out.
Okay. We are running about 15 minutes left. Next question. Protective gear is running short for medical practitioners. How can the feds assist?
Yeah, the personal protective equipment issue is an urgent one. There is a, in the first bill that was passed, there was $1 billion specifically directed towards dealing with medical equipment. The Washington State delegation, as a delegation, sent a letter to the administration early on requesting additional personal protective equipment for the state of Washington, because our state is at the front line of this. Included in, and we have an urgent need. Listen, we just got off a call with the hospital association. There was a hospital in the system that's literally sewing things together to try to make personal protective equipment because they've basically run out. So this is an urgent need, and we are expressing that to the administration, that urgent need. The Department of Defense made an announcement within the last day or two announcing that they would make some personal protective equipment available to medical providers, again, that are on the front lines of this. And then there's some nitty-gritty things as well. In the bill that has passed the House that is under consideration in the Senate, there's provisions related to masks. You've probably all read in the newspaper about the lack of N95 masks. Interestingly enough, both 3M and another mask manufacturer said, we have a whole bunch of industrial grade masks that are as protective as the medical mask, as the medical N95 mask, but because they are not designed specifically for medical purposes, we would open ourselves up to legal liability potentially. And at the request of the state of Washington, there was agreement by Democrats and Republicans to include in the bill that hopefully will be passed by the Senate today, a liability protection so that we can get those masks out to people who need them. So that is in the bill, and would get these industrial masks, you know, at the front lines and being able to protect some of our medical providers. So obviously an urgent need. Far more will need to be done on this issue. And we are hearing about it a lot from our hospitals and from our medical providers.
Okay, next question is, our clients are having problems applying for the EIDL program. Is there a step-by-step guide with screenshots to help the SBA application process? Does the SBA have enough staffing to handle the increased applications?
Okay, so SBA and our Office of Disaster Assistance has about 800 full-time people. They also have a cadre of trained individuals that we affectionately refer to as the surge cadre. But, you know, this is an unprecedented volume of businesses impact, and it's national. in comparison to maybe the hurricanes that might be a coastal. So tomorrow, our office and the Small Business Development Centers, which are a partner of SBA that we jointly fund, and some other partners such as SCORE and the Women's Business Centers, will be getting training on how to help guide people on their economic injury disaster loan applications. I will reach back after this call to see if I can get a step-by-step guide of the screenshots. However, if there isn't, I believe that in the normal, where there's physical damage, it really is very kind of self-explanatory if you select the right organizational. But because of some of the challenges of this one, there are some nuances. So we may be able to identify those nuances and provide some guidance that will make providing or fulfilling the application much easier. And at that time, maybe we could even create a step-by-step guide. So in light of this, we do have the Small Business Development Centers that are more than willing here in Washington, and they're award-winning certified business advisors that are standing ready, just waiting to help, and that's pro bono. There's no cost of that service. So I hesitate to say that we ever have enough staffing to handle the increased applications, but I can tell you that at least we are addressing that discussion.
Okay. Next question is, what future action will Congress take to support small business?
I'll take that. Although I am reticent to talk about something that's a bit of a moving target. Right now, discussions are underway about a third stimulus bill. There are a lot of ideas on the table. Probably a very significant expansion of small business lending through the SBA. Already the SBA has $7 billion of capacity. I think it's pretty clear that will not be enough in this. There's discussion around potential means of leveraging the tax code. I spoke about that, anything from employee retention tax credits to potentially temporary payroll tax holiday has been suggested by the administration. Looking at the restoration of the net operating loss carryback, which was wiped out in the tax bill from a few years ago, but the ability to use net operating loss against income in prior tax years is an idea that is being discussed. Potentially some targeted support to specific industries that are being really hammered. What form that will take, I think, is still not entirely clear. But listen, we know that our hoteliers are really getting hammered. We know that our manufacturers that have supply chain issues, with the disruption of trade, are getting hammered. Some of the discussion has even included a discussion on the various tariffs, because now is not the time to be escalating a trade war when we know that our supply chain is already significantly disrupted. So a lot of ideas are under discussion. My hope is that as Congress takes action, it does so with an eye towards our Main Street employers and those who work for them, with our families. And I would just invite, for folks who are on the call, if you have a specific action item that you think Congress ought to take, I welcome you to contact my office. I have the capacity to just email me through my website, which is kilmer.house.gov, and would certainly welcome any suggestions that you have.
Very good. Next, we're going to just do a recap with Carrie Hurd who's the director of SBA, just final comment. We'll come back to Congressman Kilmer to close us out before, and then after that, Congressman, we do have a few things about our next call, but I want to go to Carrie first to last comment, flash around a little bit.
Okay, I first want to circle back to the landlord question about assistance for landlords. Not every business will be, or every landlord will be eligible. However, owners of commercial and real estate properties are an eligible applicant. So a lot of it's going to depend on the size, the ownership, affiliation, and credit elsewhere. And final, I want to thank you for taking the time to attend today. It's very much appreciated to get the opportunity to speak to 600 people at one time versus one-on-one each person as they call. There's a few bits of information I just want to leave with you. Key websites. In Seattle, our team, sba.gov/WA. Probably one of the most important things is on the left-hand column is our office directory. The absolute most important website for you to visit is sba.gov/disaster. And finally, whether it's today when we have an economic injury, or it's any day or any individual who has a great business idea, SBA is really proud to help businesses start, grow, expand, and recover. And we're very fortunate that we have that recover slide in times like this. So thank you very much for your time today.
Congressman, Director Brown needed to jump to another meeting, so it's on to you.
Okay. Well, first, I just want to say thank you to the SBA and to the to Director Brown for their partnership and for being part of this, and for the Chamber for hosting us. If you had a question that we didn't get to, you know, please get in touch with my office through our website. I'm just www.kilmer.house.gov. Or my Tacoma office is 253-272-3515. And either I'll get back in touch with you, or a member of my team will get back in touch with you. I guess beyond that, I want to remind folks that we can all play a part in trying to prevent the spread of COVID-19. While I know these strategies have been damaging for a lot of our small businesses, it is still critical that we try to maintain social distance for folks who can telework if at all possible during this period of time. I know people sort of chuckle about the guidance from the CDC about keep washing your hands and using hand sanitizer and those other precautions, but they're really important. And I encourage you to visit cdc.gov to learn more about those practices. Second, keep getting your information from official sources. The CDC and the Washington Department of Health are two of the best resources out there. There's tons of information about prevention and treatment, who is at highest risk, how to get information about SBA disaster loans, questions about insurance, you name it. And, you know, making sure that you're getting information from reputable sources, I think, is important. Unfortunately, we have heard that there's an uptick in misinformation being spread and even malware being spread. I think there's a special place in hell for folks who are trying to take advantage of folks who are vulnerable during a time like this. Part of our communication with the administration has been to continue to try to push out information from official sources and to increase enforcement actions against those who are willingly trying to scam people. Third, I just want to encourage people to keep the faith and to take care of yourselves and of each other. This virus is certainly contagious, but it's not the only thing that's contagious. So is kindness and compassion. I have been very grateful for the number of folks who've reached out and said, hey, how can I help my Main Street employers? We've been encouraging people, if you can order takeout, order takeout. If you can buy gift cards, buy gift cards. Do what you can to try to help our local employers. We are going to continue to provide information through my social media pages, through Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And if you don't follow me, that's one way to get active information out. We are trying to push out information as quickly and as accurately as we can. I also have an email newsletter. If you hop on my website, there's a link to sign up for that. We usually do that every 2 weeks. We have now moved that to weekly just so we can get accurate information out to people. And where resources are made available, I want to make sure that people are able to take advantage of that. So please sign up for my email newsletter if you don't already get it. As I already mentioned, Congress is not done acting to mitigate the economic harms caused by this virus outbreak. Frankly, there's more that needs to be done on the public health front as well to try to reduce the spread. And while the resources mentioned on this call are significant steps, it is clear that far more will need to be done to get the job done. And I hope you count on me to continue telling your story in D.C. and fighting for more aid and assistance to our region's small businesses and nonprofits. I worked in economic development professionally for the Economic Development Board. That's what got me into this work. And so I want to make sure that we're taking care of our workers and our employers and the health of our economy. So again, don't hesitate to reach out to my office with questions or suggestions on what more we should be doing on your behalf. Again, if we didn't get to you this morning, please get in touch through my website, which is kilmer.house.gov, or 253-272-3515. And my team and I will follow up as soon as we can. So thanks again, everybody, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Congressman Kilmer. We appreciate the great information and the answers to all these questions. Just as a reminder, we're doing these calls every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. This Friday, 3:20, March 20th, 11 to 12, we're going to have a Multicare Health Systems, Dr. David Carlson, Chief Physical Physician Officer. We're going to have from Gordon Thomas Honeywell, Partner Attorney Valerie Zeke, to talk about HR issues, questions that we've been getting. We'll have somebody from the ESD here asking about those, you know, unemployment, some of those other, you know, how to help businesses maintain their payroll. And so just make sure you look to our website, look to the EDB's website with that. Thank you to our sponsors, Multicare, Business Health Trust, Pierce County Government. And I'm going to turn it over to another great leader, Bruce Kendall, President and CEO, Economic Development Board, to close us out.
Thanks, Tom. I'm going to say three things real quick, and we've heard this already. Leadership matters. Thank you, Congressman Kilmer, Director Brown, Carrie Hurd, operating at that in their various lines of work. We really appreciate that. There is an entire ecosystem of assistance available to folks that have been in place for a long, long time around economic development, the EDB, the Chamber, Pierce County Economic Development Department, the Pierce County Executive, our mayors, other chambers, Puyallup, Sumner, Fife, DuPont. There are all there for assistance that can be made available to all of you. So if you can't get an answer from one source or you can't get through, call any of us and we will get you the answers that you need from the right sources. Pierce County is tough, it's resilient, it's compassionate. In fact, that describes all of Washington State. I know there are people that have joined this call from all over the state of Washington. That's good news. We'll try to be a resource for all of you. Use us, and we'll talk to you on Friday, if not before. Thank you very much.